Hi everyone, and I'm so glad to be with you this morning. I really enjoyed a lot of the worship time, and I'm so glad that you know, we are here again, and especially to share the message. And I'm just praying that God will hold me fast in all this time this morning, and He will guide my thoughts and everything. I choose this passage, as Elaine said. I was inspired by Friday, 14th of February, obviously. Even my girls at school, they made cards for us, the Valentine card. And I was trying to ask them, do you know why you have to make a card? Do you know what this is about? Well, it's a card, laddie. What do you need a reason, you know, to receive a card? And I said, all right, that's fine for now. I'm glad it's that, at least. Yeah, that was okay. But obviously, thinking about that, I thought this is a perfect moment, because this passage from the 1 Corinthians chapter 13, 13 verses, it's about love and what love is, especially in the church. This passage was written for a church, for the church members in Corinth. But we often use it for weddings, don't we? When we want to declare our love to someone, we use, you know, chapter 13, right? But actually, Apostle Paul here is trying to teach us, how should we conduct ourselves in the church? How should we ministry in the church? And if we don't do it with love, there's nothing there. And how can you see love in church? That's, again, very, very important. And obviously, I was inspired by the last verse of chapter 13, which clearly said that in the end, there's three. Faith, hope, and love will remain. But the greatest of all this is love. So obviously, we have to ask ourselves, why is love the greatest? Why Paul is ending up with this conclusion, which is wonderful, that love will surpass everything, will be the greatest. And why is that? And I think in his passage he's trying to tell us. So let's listen to the passage from verse 1 to verse 13. If I speak with the languages of men and angels, but don't have love, I have become sounding brass or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and know all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but don't have love, I am nothing. If I give out all my goods to feed the poor, if I give my body to be burned, but don't have love, it profits me nothing. Love is patient and is kind. Love doesn't envy. Love doesn't brag. Love is not proud. Doesn't behave itself inappropriately. Doesn't seek its own way. Is not provoked. Takes no account of evil. Doesn't rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with the truth. Bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. But where there are prophecies, they will be done away with. Where there are various languages, they will cease. Where there is knowledge, it will be done away with. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when that which is complete has come, then that which is partial will be done away with. When I was a child, I spoke as a child. I felt as a child. I thought as a child. Now that I have become a man, I have put away childish things. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then I will know fully, even as I was also fully known. But now faith, hope, and love remain. These three, but the greatest of these three is love. Amen. It's a wonderful Bible passage, and it's written in a book that Paul doesn't do a lot of theology in this letter to the church in Corinth. It doesn't teach them as much as it doesn't have the same teaching framework or content as the book of Romans, for example, the letter that Paul sent to the church in Rome. And he was so eager to go and visit them. But the book in Corinth is more about the issues, the problems that are in the church and how they should deal with them in the church. So Paul tells them, you have a lot of problems, but I think I know your solution. And to be honest, if you go to a doctor and he says, well, you have high blood pressure, you have, your liver is failing, your kidney is not working, I don't know, your lungs are full of something else, but if you take this tiny little pill just once, you get everything resolved. You get everything fixed. Don't you want to like to have a doctor like that? When you go to GP, he will say to you, you know, it's you're in such a bad shape. But we have this little tiny thing. Just take it. Everything will go away. This is Paul's attitude when he writes this to the church in Corinth. You have so many issues. There are so many people doing so many things wrongly in the church. Or they act as a Christian in a way they shouldn't. And Paul says, I know what the solution is. And I hope you like it. And the solution is that you don't know how to live or to act, conduct yourself in church with love. Oh, this is what I've been missing, Paul. And I don't think they were ready for this. And I hope you're ready for this in this morning. Okay. There's a few interesting things about love. And obviously some of them, I just want to remind you. That you may know them. In Greek language, you have many words for love. It's a shame that today in our modern languages, we don't translate them. or we don't have more, just one word for love. Because it confuses people, right? it's hard sometimes to communicate or to say that you love someone. Because they may understand it wrongly. Or obviously they look weird to you. I never told my colleague, for example, at work, that I love him, which I do, to be honest. But I never told him that. I can, to be honest, even this morning, I cannot come to you after the service and I say, do you know what? I love you. I don't want you to, you know, be scared away. Well, what this guy wants, you know? What do you mean you love me? We better know each other, so what's that about? But if you're a Greek person, yeah, you can say that. You can go up to people and tell them what you feel about them, and they will understand because you will use different words, and that will be okay. Two guys, if they become best friends, or two women, they can tell each other, you know, we love you. And today will not be a problem if you use the right word in Greek. But in our language, in English, even in my language, we didn't do too much of a job to translate this. So here are some of the love words from Greek that we have. One of them, the first one, obviously, is eros, which is a physical love. It's a type of love that involves passion, lust, and sometimes, or romance. That's his 14th of February, right? Valentine's Day. Eros. And then you have another kind of word, which is storge, which is it's for the family love, you know. Is a natural love in the family members, between the family members in a household. And I can, you know, tell this word to my daughters, even to my wife, obviously, because I love them in that way. They are my family. And if someone would tell you that word, you know that you are part of the family. There's another word called pragma, where we have the word pragmatic, which is a practical love. It's a friendship love that, you know, there's no physical involvement there. Phileo, obviously, is another love that, philia, it's affectionate love. It's a love that you always have in your family between spouses, between your wife or your husband. And it's Plato was the one that wrote a lot about it on this, and he really liked it He really liked this world. From him we have the word platonic, a platonic love. It's affection there. You feel something for that person, but obviously it's not in a physical way. It's just you care so much for that person. You like him so much. You want to be around him. Everything while he or her says, it's important for you. There is ludus. Obviously, some people will use that word for love, which means a playful love. You play that you want to love for someone, which actually it's a Latin word, but Greeks will always use it. And I think one of the strangest words for love is mania, which is an obsessive love, maniacal. It's mania. When you say this, you are obsessed. This is kind of a love that a stalker will use to stalk his victim, that he loves so much, but when he catches it, he will not let it go, and he makes it very hard, and he will strangle that person with feelings and love. It's a stalker love. And nonetheless, the last one that I don't like, but which I think is so much spread, is philautia, which is self-love. You love yourself. Do you know this love? When you look in the mirror, did you look in the mirror this morning and you said, I hate you? What did you say? Oh, you're looking good. It's time to go to church, right? You're so impressed. Oh, I never did my hair like this. I think it's a new thing for me now. It's really awesome. Yep. Even this morning, I was in the mirror. My wife is in front of me in the mirror. And I said, well, you just move a little bit so I can see myself. And then I discovered, look at that. Yeah, I was quite impressed with myself, obviously. It's that kind of love, self-love. We're all full of it, obviously. And we should just try to find a way to get it out a little bit more from our hearts. But obviously it's something that Paul is going to teach us, and this morning all remind us how to love. From the beginning, God, obviously he created us in his image. So that means we are able. We have the ability to love. Shouldn't be all hate in our hearts and bitterness and angry, envy. No, we are capable of love. So if you listen to this passage and in any point you go like, this is kind of hard for me. I don't know if I'm able to. Think again. God created us with ability to love. He created us in his image so we can love in this way. To be honest, I was quite shocked of some things here because I found myself like repenting myself all this week of all kind of wrong loves or wrong things that I do when I should love in another way. So this is quite interesting. Paul reminds us in Romans chapter 13, verse 10, that love is the fulfillment of law. So why is Paul saying him? Are we going to back to the Old Testament? Are we taking back the law of Old Testament? No. The idea is that when you love God in a way so perfect, with all your heart, with everything that is in you, with your mind, with your strength, with everything, that's the perfect way to love God. And God called us to that. I want you to love me like that. But the same thing, you should love your neighbor as yourself, you know? And in the same way, in other words, it's the same thing. You should love your neighbor perfectly. Now, if you love God perfectly and you love your neighbor perfectly, you will never go against God. You will never violate God's law, and you're never going to violate another man's life in any way. You're never going to be violent to them. That's why Paul comes us and calls us that, and is trying to teach us that the love is the fulfillment of the law. You can do it. You should be searching for it. But in Corinth, obviously, we have a lot of problems. We have terrible sins. And Paul, at one point, says, if I look to the people outside the church, they don't sin like you sin in the church. These people going against each other. There's a lot of tribulation, a lot of problems, a lot of argue. They are mad with each other. Their conduct in the church is outrageous. And Paul is outraged about everything that happens in the church. Even some people will say, well, I don't want to be in the body of the church. I don't want to be a hand. I don't want to be a nose. I don't want to be an eye. You know, I want to be something else. And Paul says, well, it's not for you to choose. You can't do that. God is the one who puts everybody in the church to whom he likes. If God likes you to have a specific gift, to do a specific ministry, that's what he wants you to do in church. So you can rebel, you can go against this, because you have to understand that in church, everything needs to be done with love. That's the framework of all the ministries. If you ask anyone, how should I do this ministry in a church? The first thing that you should start when you're teaching people is, well, the first thing that you have to do when you sing in front is to sing with love. Ministry with love. Obviously, when you're teaching, teach with love. When you manifest your gift in church, if it's anything that you can do, do it with love. And Paul, he will start to explain why. Now, we have three things that I want to look at this morning. And one, the first one is the prominence of love, the perfection of love, and the last one will be the persistence of love. Love is persistent, and that is important. It's the permanence of love. It's permanent. And what that means, I think it will melt our hearts. I hope so. But let's start with the beginning. Paul is looking at them and says, do you know what? Let me tell you this. When I look at you, there's some problems. You can speak in all kinds of languages. And the idea is that Paul is taking everything to extreme. He's saying, and he's not a teaching here about the speaking in tongues in church, the spiritual speaking in tongues in church. It's not a broad teaching on this one. He just admits the fact that if you would know all the languages in the world, all the languages that can be spoke, or people would come up with, if you can do them all, more, if you can speak, you know, in heavenly languages, in languages that the angels will speak, and you don't have love, you're like an instrument that is broken and nobody can use it. Nobody would want to use it. I played in our brass band back in my hometown in church. I played the trumpet. I still have it, but I broke it. So, yeah, don't be upset. I'll fix it. Yeah. I don't see any use of a trumpet right now. That's why I'm not eager to sort it out. So when I was growing up in the church, there was no place for a trumpet in the worship team. It's like whatever I came with the trumpet. Well, it's just sing a few notes, just here when it's a pause or something. It was nothing like that. But obviously in the brass band we all sang and it was wonderful. And I know how an instrument will sound when it's broken, when it doesn't make a right sound. It's crippled. It makes you twinge in yourself. It's like, what are you doing? What are you doing there? Why are you singing like that? I don't know. I have no idea. The instrument is broken. Nobody wants to hear it. And Paul takes everything and takes it to an extreme. If you have all the languages, if you know all the prophecy, you know all the mysteries of God, you have all the question on this universe with answers in your mind, and you have all the knowledge, there's nothing that will surprise you. You know everything. And to be honest, I don't want to be around such a person who knows everything. You can't surprise him. And it's awful. And I have all faith. What do you mean all faith? Do you know what it means to have all faith? So, what, to remove mountains? Jesus says that for you to remove a mountain, you don't need all faith. You need just a little ounce of faith. And it'll go away. Or you can move it, whatever. But even if you have all the faith in the world, and you don't have love, it profits me nothing. I don't have love, I am nothing. If I give everything what I have, again here the image is that you would have so much money that you can give them away, or in a way, if you take everything that you have and you sell it away, and you take all that money, there will be so much money that you can give people on this planet one by one a good sum of money to make them rich. It's taking everything that you have, dividing them so it can, you know, fill everyone with money. You can give away to everyone. And you probably, you know, you will still have plenty. That's the idea of Paul here. He's taking everything to extreme so people would understand. Even if you would do all the things that you can do on this earth, but if you don't have love, doesn't profit to anyone. It's nothing. And this is the chorus of the first three verses. It's nothing. It's nothing. Doesn't profit. It's nothing. You can give your body to be burned, you know. And here he's talking about sacrifice. You can do, you can even do the biggest sacrifice that you can do in this world for someone is to, you know, to give yourself to be burned alive. Which I think some people from other countries like Middle East kind of inspired about this, to be honest. To burn yourself for something. Why they went for this, to be honest? Because it's the ultimate way of sacrificing yourself. To burn yourself in public for something that you believe in. Something that's dear to you is important. That's the ultimate sacrifice. And even if you would do that for God, or for your church, or for something that you believe in, but you don't do it in love, there's nothing, is zero. So this is why we learn here a few things about this attitude. And Paul says, but if you do them without love, they are with no value. Do you know what that means? There's no value in what you do. Nobody will be interested. There's no value. You're worth nothing. But if you do them without love, it's like they are dead. Dead things. Faith without deeds is dead. So ministry without love is death. There's nothing there. This is why Paul wants them to understand this very clearly. There's no life in what you do if you don't put love in it. It's no value. Your ministry is not producing anything valuable and is bringing death in the life of the congregation. And look at how we took the ministry and we regulated with so many rules that it's so hard to people nowadays to associate them with the church or with a meeting or with people in a church. So they go away, finding another church that really can welcome them in their service, in their ministry. I think this is the way Jesus ends up at the door, knocking. Can you please let me in? I want to be in your service. No, we have rules and regulations here. You can't just come in as you want. Which Paul comes again in the end and says, you know, there is a need, and obviously in the church, for order. But when you put too much emphasis on the rules and you forget about the love, you may lose a lot of people. I'm going to try to do an example here, a little bit of this. I think this is off, right? So we got two microphones here, right? Now, for this to work, this goes like this. I have to cut my microphone, obviously. So I'm going to use this one. Right, this microphone, if you believe it or not, is infused with love, right? But this one. Now, let me ask you, which one do you like? Which one do you think is best to use? I think it's this one, right? Now, when someone comes and ministers in the church, and if you're full of love, things are working. This is how I know people in church doesn't understand ministry with love. When there's problems, and there's problems every week, in every circumstances, at the prayer group, at the worship team, I don't know, in the church meeting of the leaders, there's always problems and problems and problems. Now, it's good to have some kind of problems, but not all the time, not everything. And I know for sure that people need to remind themselves that ministry needs to be done in love in the church. Otherwise, it's not going to work. Right? This is an important example that we should remember about love during this passage. Now, As we move in this chapter, we get to the perfections of love. Now, this is something. They're all wonderful exposed, and Paul has a wonderful mind explaining us from God, guided by the Holy Spirit, what love really is. How should you put love in action in church? And do you notice there that I use the word very important, action? Although sometimes we think love is an attribute, or it can be described to adjectives, through attributes. No, in this passage, as other scholars pointed out, is actually described through verbs, which means love is best shown in action. When you say, I love you, and you don't do anything that you say, it means you don't love that person. When you say, I'm ministering with love, but you don't show love in the ministry, it means you didn't understand. Love needs to be expressed in action. That's why it's so weird, because we chose a lot of times the words that, you know, express idealistic things. I love you through the moon and back. What's that about? You know? I love you so much that I can go to the moon for you. I can reach out in this universe. And I can bring all the stars that you like. Well, what kind of love is that? Obviously, you can't do it. So you should, if you're a person who someone tells you that, you should ask him, that's not real love, to be honest. No, no, I love you so much. No, that's not real love. Dean Martin has a wonderful song about love, if you remember. When you look to the moon like a big pizza pie, you know, that's amore, that's love. Really? That's love? I don't think so. You're just hungry, to be honest. That's everything that I feel about it. But nothing else. I often got myself in trouble in my household. When my wife asked me about this. Are you sure you love me? Are you sure you love us? Because sometimes when I look at what you do, I can question myself. Oh, no doubt. Please don't doubt on my love. But if you don't put it in action, you might be doing something else. So let's see what Paul says. I'm hoping I can finish this. Just pray for me. Be loving, right? Love is patient. What does Paul try to teach us about this love here? And in here, Paul tries to remind us that this is the maximum patience that you can give to someone. Is that point before you break into burst and anger. But you take that point and you move it a little bit more further. Love is patient. That kind of patient. That there's nothing in this world that you can, you know, be patient about. And I don't know who can love like that. Have you noticed that if you can do all the things in the ministry, the same way love can do all the other things. So it can help you to be a victorious person, a victorious Christian in this area. This word here used by Paul, it's a word specific for people. We can do this. We can be patient. And not this person is a person that never explodes, retaliates. It's a person that never bursts into anger or seek vengeance. It's a person that never retaliates. You can go on and on with this. Has a long temper. You have a patience with the people they have done wrong to you. You can tolerate whatever what comes towards you. This is the kind of love that Paul talks in here. It's not a weakness, but it's a wonderful manifestation of love in your life. Now let me ask you this. If when you get married, your partner tells you, do you know what? If you do me this one thing, that's it. I'll break off. I'll divorce. I'll go away. If you do me this one thing, right? It gets me so mad, so annoying, and I'll divorce you. But if someone that loves you becomes your husband, your wife, comes to you and says, do you know what? I don't think there's anything that you can do in this life to stop my love for you and make me go away. You have my full support. There will be nothing that you will do that will break my love for you. And obviously we're talking about the person that will be a genuine person and will try to love you back in the same way. Now, from these two persons, right, who would you choose to get married with? The second one, right? Obviously. And that's the kind of love that God loves us and every one of us. And I will say a few more things about it at the end. Love is patient. It's maximally patient. It's a long temper. It never breaks into outburst and envy. Love is kind. And the thing that you have to remember here with love is kind is that you have to do the things that will make you look, it will help the other person understand that you are useful to them. In the church in the first century, people were selling everything what they have. And I covered this a little bit the last time when I was here. And I want to remind this because it's important. They did that. They sell everything because there were so many people in the church in the need. They were poor. So they were selling their valuables, their wealth. So everybody in the church that doesn't have anything to have something. They were showing that they care about each other. Love is kind. You find yourself to be useful to the other person. Extend kindness to everyone. It seeks to love. You know, you love one another in a way that you will find yourself useful in the church. I asked one time a couple. He came to me and said, you know, my wife did something terrible and I'm about to get a divorce. They live in Norway and wife told him the relation was not great. And he said that he wants to go home to her parents to a visit. And she took the children with her. But when he called that, you know, to find out when she's coming back, she said, you know what, I actually want a divorce. I don't want to come back. But she never told him anything or indicated that she wants to divorce him. So she planned everything in her mind. By the way, these are Christians. It's a family in the church. Obviously, she, felt it was disrespectful and not loving and all that. And she made a statement. And I don't want to judge her. But when her husband came to the church, I was there. And we had a long talk. And at the end, I said, you know what? I just want to challenge you to something. I know it's hard right now, but she decided to come. She decided to stay with her parents. And you have a child. They had a boy. They had one child. And I said, do you know it's going to be very hard for her to be here? Her parents don't have a lot of money. So why don't you just try to help her with some money every month? Although she looks like she ran away, just show an act of kindness, a small act of kindness, that you still love her and you want her to come back. Do you know what I said to me? What? What did you try me to do? I will never do that. She's the one who left. She's the one who did that. No. But I said, but are you still, you know, in love with her? Do you still love her? And he said, well, he's kind of, I kind of love her, but why she did this? He said, but just show an act of kindness, because even though she doesn't want to come back right now, maybe in a few years, she will come back to you or will return to the family. And she will remember your kindness, that you still loved her. After five or six years, they are back together. But he never wanted to do it. Do you know how hard it is to show kindness when people are turning your back? Show kindness when someone is rejecting you. Make yourself useful to them in a way or another. And when you think about the church, you know, how should you conduct yourself in ministry? If you're in front or if you're doing something else, show this kindness to people. Love does not envy. And the reality here is that love is not jealous. Now, jealousy is very ugly, very weird. And in the church of Corinth, all these kind of loves that Paul is talking here about are inspired from the life of the church in Corinth. So in the church in Corinth, there was a lot of jealousy. People were jealous on each other of their gifts. We want someone else's gift. And that's jealousy. I want what he has. And you know what happens sometimes? When you get what he has, you want him to not have that gift anymore. He shouldn't do it anymore because you want it. You can look much better doing that. Paul is talking about jealousy a lot in these passages. And he creates division in the church. Hence the image about the body. And why some people in the Bible don't want to be what God intended for them to be. More than that, Paul is talking even in Philippians chapter 1 verse 14 to 18. About some preachers in the churches preaching from jealousy. Jealousy of whom? Of him. And Paul says, you're jealous of me? Well, my gifts, my preaching? And he says, you know what? I don't care if you're jealous of me. And he goes on in the last verse saying, you know what? Verse 18, I rejoice. Why? Because even people preaching from jealousy or from a good thing, good heart, the word of God is preached. So I'm rejoicing. Do you know what you can do in church to not be jealous of others? You should be glad for them. So if someone sings very nice and you want their voice and you don't have a voice, just be glad for them. But it's so hard in church to do that sometimes, do you know? I feel sometimes I struggle here. I don't know about you. But it's not easy here. Love does not brag. I'm going to try to speed up things just a little bit. Love does not brag. And with bragging is something else. You want to make others to want what you have. That's why you brag. Look at me. Don't you want to be like me? You brag because someone else is not like that. And you know that. And maybe he can never be like that. But how you do it. I'm sorry. I know you might want it, but you might never be able to do it. Love never brags. Love is not full of pride, arrogance. You puff, that's the word. You puff like a bellow. You know, the one that starts the fire. You puff yourself. Oh, look at me and who I am. There's a famous composer named Pietro Mascagni. And he wrote an opera, and actually he dedicated it to himself. And he says, in his dedication, he says, I dedicate this to myself with distinguished esteem and unalterable satisfaction. Right? He was a famous conductor, and he was invited to conduct a famous act, and apparently he was very, very, he had an envy in his heart for another conductor, very famous conductor from Italy. And this conductor was named Arturo Toscanini. And he said, you know what, I'm going to come and do a part of a Verdi for you, but I want you to pay me more than you pay him. So at the end of the concert, they paid him 1 lira. Do you know why? Because the other one didn't take any money. He did it for nothing. It's like, no problem. You want to be a show-off? We're going to teach you a lesson. There's a wonderful piece called Cavalleria Rusticana. You can search it. It's wonderful. He wrote that. He composed that. He was a very brilliant, and he had a genius mind, but he was very full of pride. If you go on, love does not behave itself inappropriately. It's not rude. That's the word here. And to be honest, Paul is using the same word to describe this kind of the love that is not in Romans chapter 1 verse 27 when he talks about men sleeping with other men. They are doing inappropriate things. Love is not rude like that. Love is different. It will never put you in a moment or a situation that you embarrass yourself. Love does not seek its own way. Love builds others, adds value to other people with everything that they are. You might know to do things better than others, but if you can help someone to be better, you will put yourself in the passenger seat. Love is not provoked. Again, like my example, there's nothing that you can make me burst into flames and shout at you. I'll always treat you with kindness. Love takes no account of evil. Oh, this is one that I struggle sometimes. I don't know about you. This word here, it's a word from an accountant that knows how to keep count on stuff. And you know everyone in the church did you wrong and why they did it. And you drag this and you remind this to yourself on and you don't let it go. Love takes no account of evil. He's not writing every day the transgression of all the people in the church. The pastor told me that. I'll remember this. Oh, that sister told me, I'll remember this. And you keep this into your mind and you find the right moment to come back and say, gotcha. Do you know why he did for me? I'll tell you this. And you keep that in accounting. Love does not rejoice in unrighteousness. You take no pleasure in others people's sins and transgressions and mistake. You don't do that. And I think gossip has a lot of things to do here with this issue. Doesn't rejoice in unrighteousness. You know, people tell stories about others people's sin like they would like to lift them. Oh, do you know what he did? Take no pleasure in unrighteousness. But rejoice with truth. Love is honest. That kind of honest that doesn't get you in trouble. Right? It's that honesty that you know that sometimes, although you have to be in a very cruel way, truthful to that person, you hold yourself. Right? And for the all the lovers that celebrated 14, if you're asked if someone else is prettier, you say no. And you don't wait and you don't pause. You say no, right? And with these questions, these are the kinds of questions. After 40, 20, 30 years of marriage, if you ask if a piece of clothing still looks the best, it still looks the best. That's the right answer. Don't get it confused with that one because you get in trouble. Love better all things, right? And that means it can cover the ugliness. If you know someone can get in trouble or look bad of something that you cover that one. If he's truthful and honest and he wants to repent, you cover that thing. Not to lie or to make it go, no, but if it will deprive people and it will make people to look bad, you will try to keep their dignity. Love believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. Love believes all things means love is never suspicious, constantly suspicious. Oh, why you did that? Oh, I know why you did that. You wanted to do me wrong. Remember Job with his friends? They all suspect him of something. Come on, tell us, you did a sin. No, I have done any. Love hopes all things. You will never give up. You will never give up on that person if you love them, no matter what. And endures all things, in sickness and in health, in good and bad. Rich or poor, now this is a controversy today, right? You will overcome them all. This is the kind of love that we are called to show in the ministry. And I'm just praying that God will help us, because you have to acknowledge this is like a command to us in the ministry. Love each other like this. Please agree that you have the capacity in your life from God to do it. And more than ever, please understand that this is not an ideal living the church, but this is how we should take it as a norm in the ministry. And let the Holy Spirit work in your life. Closing this, the permanence of love, the persistence of love, is that love never fails. And it means it will never collapse in decay. It will, like the petals of a flower, they will never go away. Love will always remain. And Paul says, you know, knowledge is going to go away. And the prophecies will going to go away. And the tongues will go away. And the word is here will cease to exist by themselves. Knowledge will stop. Prophecy will stop. But love will go on and on. And he closes with the idea that now remain three. Hope, faith, and love. But the greatest is love. Why? Because you know what? Faith is not going to help you in heaven, because you will see God face to face. Hope will not work in heaven, because the promises will be delivered. All of them. And the only thing that's left in heaven is no faith, no hope. It's just the love of God. 1 John chapter 4. God is love. In the end, love will prevail. I want to mention something I think is important. In all this universe, God created the human beings. He created us. And I think one of the arguments is that God wanted to show the whole universe the real, maybe 100%, I don't know, but the real side of love, and how big can he love someone? How much he can love? Maybe all the other beings in heaven, they would understand what, you know, God is saying when he says he loves someone. But because his love, he wanted to show them that he can create human beings, a creature, that even though it will rebel against him, that will be the moment, that's the circumstances to show the real love that God has. That he came on this earth, sent his only begotten son. And he obeyed the Father 100%. So the sacrifice on the cross, the atonement, could be 100% real. So he can forgive us and show us his love. There's no one else in this universe. That's why there's a jealousy in heaven, a good jealousy of us. Because we can fully experience and live in our lives the love of God and in everyone's. And all the church can experience it by all living it together in the church. This is not an ideal. It's a norm in the church. And I don't want you to go and thinking right now, do you know what? Leslie was not loving the church, right? Let's go home, put up the mirror, and look in that mirror and say, let's find out where you don't love in the church, where you don't ministry with love in the church. God help us all. Amen.